You are listening to a free podcast of The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. To support the show and receive nearly an hour extra material daily, become a member today at majority.fm. Resistance is futile.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. It's time to look in the mirror, America. Do you like what you see?
I keep referring to Obama as the magic Negro.
Do you like what you see now?
Well, suck on this.
It's just a mirror, America.
Shared sacrifice by everybody.
What could it do to you except reflect your image?
I did nothing wrong at the Minneapolis airport.
The Majority Report.
Far more credible to me than PBS.
And Frontline.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
And I get the feeling you've been cheated.
It is Thursday, April 4th, 2013. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. Today on the program, previewing the panel I'll be moderating at Judson Memorial Church, Washington Square South in New York City, Kevin Gastola of Fire Dog Lake, one of the few, really one of, I think, three people in this country who have been reporting on a consistent and diligent basis the trial of Bradley Manning, or I should say probably more accurately, the pretrial hearings of Bradley Manning. Also on the program today, the sequester continues to cascade across the country. Cancer clinics turning away thousands of Medicare patients because of the sequester. Just more evidence of this slow burn. Today in New York City, perhaps the largest strike of fast food workers, I believe, not just perhaps, I think it's the largest strike of fast food workers in this country ever. Also today, a blockbuster investigative report based upon leaked documents that of millions of leaked records and thousands of names, producing a massive investigation into the offshore accounts of thousands of people around the country, the world, really, avoiding taxes. All that and more on today's program. Just a reminder. Well, I'll give this when we get him on the phone. We're going to take a break. Well, I'll tease it now. Forgive me, folks. Saul's what now? Almost a month old. Still has not learned how to sleep. Can you believe it? Tomorrow night at 7:30 p.m. I guess it starts at 8, but doors will be open at 7:30 p.m. at the Judson Memorial Church at 55 Washington Square South in New York City. Brigida Jones' daughter, an Icelandic MP, WikiLeaks activist, will be on the panel. Alexa O'Brien, an independent journalist who has done amazing work on reporting on this Bradley Manning case. Peter Hart, activism director and media analyst at FAIR, and also our next guest, Kevin Gastola. From Fire Dog Lake. We will take a break and we will be talking to him in just a moment. We've got a lot in store for you today. Some interesting sound. It's fascinating to hear the right wing respond to the firing of Mike Rice, the Rutgers coach. I mean, just a weird view inside of their minds. Also, a reminder today, 45 years ago today, I believe it was 45 years, Martin Luther King was assassinated. Just something to think about. Maybe we'll attach some audio on the back of today's show for members. But if you get a chance, go and listen to one of his speeches and wonder what would have happened had he not been assassinated as he was making a big turn into, and perhaps it's not properly characterized as a big turn, but it is an extension of his civil rights work into social justice in general and anti-war activism. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll be talking to Kevin Gasol. We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report on the phone. It's a pleasure to welcome to the program journalist from Fire Dog Lake, Kevin Gasola. Thanks for taking the time, Kevin.
Thank you.
Tomorrow night, we will be in New York City. I know you're actually at an airport now, I think, en route. But tomorrow night we'll be doing a panel. I've already mentioned it on the program on Bradley Manning, and I should also say that you're going to be in New York tonight, I believe, interviewing Phil Donahue on his documentary. Is that right?
That's correct, and also, you know, it's 10 years since the Iraq War. I'm going to talk to him about mea culpas in the media, and just, you know, get his opinion on where things are at.
Yeah, those there's plenty to talk about, those mea culpas. We'll put a link on majority.fm to that tonight. Where is the location? Do you know? I'm sorry, I don't have that information. But
oh, yeah, we're doing it at the Culture Project. It's on 45 Bleecker Street in New York. I believe that's the Manhattan area.
Yep, that's right. It's downtown, just north of Houston. Okay, so let's get in. Will you, for the sake of making sure that everybody's on the same page, just give us a broad recap of the Bradley Manning case and where we are now in the government's prosecution of Bradley Manning.
Well, currently we have a trial scheduled for June 3rd, and Manning himself gave a statement in court on February 28th, and he pled guilty to some of the offenses in the charges that the government has been pushing against him. And he himself has accepted responsibility for passing information on to WikiLeaks. And now the situation is the government could accept the plea. They could decide to not pursue other charges, or they could go forward. And they so far have indicated they have every intention of pursuing the more severe charges. So to break down the charges, Manning pled guilty to the willful communication of the information. He pled guilty to possessing that information and that he was unauthorized to possess it in the way that he did. And
now, just to remind folks, the information that you're referring to consists of the collateral damage, the so-called collateral damage video of U.S. forces killing two Reuters reporters and a third person who is attempting to provide medical attention, I guess, to supposed militants. In addition, thousands of cables, diplomatic cables.
Yep, that's correct. And we have Iraq war logs. We have Afghan war logs. You know, those Iraq war logs are actually the making headlines because the Guardian's been doing reporting with them in the past month, finding details on how General David Petraeus was likely connected to Iraqi death squads in the country. So Manning himself has admitted that that information was provided to WikiLeaks, and now the government has the ability to push more severe charges that Manning claims or his defense believes Manning did not commit, such as aiding the enemy, the most severe charge, the one that I think is probably the most egregious and shows that the government is trying to make an example out of him. And but I won't go into much detail on that yet. Maybe we'll go into it some more after I lay out the other charges. He's facing charges under the Espionage Act, and Obama himself has brought a record amount of cases against alleged leakers or whistleblowers under the Espionage Act. He also faces a violation of a federal larceny statute, so they want to argue that he stole or purloined or converted the information improperly, and that's how they're pursuing him. So he does not think he committed any of these federal offenses, but he has admitted that he violated military codes, and that was quite obvious. It was pretty clear that he was going to have to admit or confess that he violated those military codes.
And so let's talk about, in particularly, aiding the enemy. This is a charge, though, while the government has indicated it will not seek the death penalty, it is a charge, it is a capital offense.
That's correct. And it also is an any person offense. So everyone should be concerned. Don't just say, I'm not in the military, I don't have to worry about it. The aiding the enemy charge could be attached to somebody who gets designated an enemy combatant. In fact, I think the military has used some form of this charge against people in the war on terrorism who they have wanted to bring into a court to prosecute them for war crimes, I believe. So
I want to put a fine point on this because people need to really understand the difference here. That charge of aiding the enemy, had Bradley Manning simply been a civilian and had come across this material in some fashion and had passed it on, like he said in his statement, he attempted to pass it on to the New York Times and I believe it was the Washington Post, and had a civilian done this, and then ultimately to WikiLeaks, had a civilian done this, they would still be subject to that same charge, just to be clear on that.
Yeah, to be clear, you could still bring an aiding the enemy charge against a person. But I tend to think that they're using the aiding the enemy charge because they can, because Manning is a soldier. And another thing to add in our conversation here is that there's a well-known exchange now that happened during the pretrial proceedings where the judge actually asked the prosecutor point blank if it was that he had provided information to the New York Times or the Washington Post, would you be prosecuting him in the way that you have? To get to the idea or the issue of what is WikiLeaks, because really in this trial we have, or these proceedings, we haven't defined or come to an agreement on what WikiLeaks happens to be. You know, the defense says it's a media organization. The other one, I think, would dispute that it is and would put it in the realm of some kind of a hacktivist cult or group that is engaging in acts that are detrimental to the security of the United States. So she asked her this question, and she replied, yes. So their claim is that it wouldn't matter. And then that is very profound. I think people should be concerned because that in itself indicates a risk to press freedom. I mean, you can extend it out and say, you know, I don't know how much you're aware of the way that they're going about proving this charge, but allegedly they have digital media obtained in a raid on Osama bin Laden's compound, and it shows that he asked a person, a member of Al-Qaeda, for this information and said that he wanted to have this to use for his own purposes, and asked for the state copies of State Department cables and asked for even some copies of Iraq or Afghanistan war logs and wanted to read them. And this is part of the evidence that they're using to push the case. And not even more. It gets even more insidious because there is apparently a person who is a member of this SEAL team that went on the mission who is who they call a DOD operator who is now being allowed to be interviewed by the defense. The defense wants to talk to him. But they're being obstructed on the basis that it just makes no sense. And they are having these issues around getting to him. And this is a key witness that they're going to use to make these claims about this evidence.
Okay, so let's just I just want to lay this out because Yoki Benkler, a law professor at Harvard Law School and co-director of the Berkman Center for Internet and Society at Harvard, points to this this notion that somehow Manning was aiding the enemy because this information showed up on bin Laden's or allegedly showed up on bin Laden's computer would be the equivalent of Daniel Ellsberg being charged with the same thing. It had the Viet Cong read the New York Times, essentially, and read the Pentagon Papers in the New York Times. And the reason why the defense would want to interview the member of that SEAL team would be to ask them what else was on that computer. In other words, if there's probably a wide range of things that bin Laden was reading about the United States, and this would have been simply a part of it that would have theoretically also been published in international publications.
Right. Well, I mean, to make another point, this is incredibly ridiculous on the fact that if you were to go through all the statements that Al-Qaeda or its affiliates have ever made where it used a journalist's work, perhaps maybe Bob Woodward, or a writer's work, maybe we're talking like Noam Chomsky or someone else, and if you were to maybe even look at a president or past officials in government whose statements have been taken out of context or interpreted and used when arguing or trying to justify or issue edicts or whatever you want to call them to members of the group to say you have to take this action. I would happen to think that there would be a long list of people that you would have to start putting under investigation and would have to pursue for quote unquote aiding the enemy. So that's how like ridiculous it is. The government is going after Bradley Manning in this fashion.
Okay. And so this is where we are at this juncture. We are waiting to hear if the government will continue to pursue these capital offense charges or simply accept what more or less constitutes a plea, I guess, by Bradley Manning. Let me ask you one of the central questions about this case that I think In your mind, is Bradley Manning a whistleblower, and what is what does it mean if he is?
Well, I said this much in a Nation article that I wrote a couple weeks ago that I believe that Manning is a classic whistleblower, and that he himself, you can read through his statement and see that what he was doing indicates that he wanted to expose what he believed to be misconduct or wrongdoing, and so that people could see it. We're sitting here right now having this conversation, and tomorrow is the anniversary of the release of the collateral murder video. So because there are multiple examples, I'll take this one example because I think it's a very, very rich example of how Manning is a whistleblower. So what he said in his statement was that he was able to find this video because he was in the intelligence facility where he was working as an analyst, and other soldiers were viewing it. They had a discussion about how it violated the rules of engagement, and what he did is some research to figure out what this video was, and figured out that Reuters had been trying to obtain it because the video actually shows that a Reuters journalist is being killed, as you said at the front of this segment. And Reuters had been trying to get this through a Freedom of Information Act request, and CENTCOM, U.S. Central Command, had been blocking it and was not responsive to it. So he wanted to get this video to Reuters, and also, you know, he wanted to release the video so that everybody could view it, so people could see what was happening. He characterized it as war porn in his statement, and said that he was just really bothered by how the soldiers were talking in the video, and he described what they were doing as maybe holding a magnifying glass up to a bunch of ants and trying to melt them because what they were doing was, you know, they were hovering over them in this gunship and were firing on people who were helpless and wounded. And he didn't just want to release the video. He wanted to go through an effort to actually send a copy on a CD to Reuters in London so that they would have an actual authentic copy. So if the U.S. military said, this isn't really the video, they would be able to go, nope, we've got it, and it's got all the authentic data on it that can prove. And this shows that your soldiers were responsible for killing our employees. So that just, you know, that adds to my feeling that he is a whistleblower.
And what of those people who say, well, had he just released the collateral damage video as opposed to thousands of cables and logs, maybe your case would be solid. But what is your response to that that claim?
Well, I don't know if the rebuttal I would give to that is sufficient enough to end debate. But in my conversations with a Justice Department whistleblower, now works for the Government Accountability Project, Jocelyn Raddick, she has told me that the Justice Department won't accept the amount of information as part of the defense. In other words, they'll pursue leakers for not releasing enough information. They'll pursue them for releasing too much information. So they could say, you're only showing a sliver of what's going on. There are many more documents, and it would say that we actually are doing what we're supposed to do. There's no misconduct. And had this whistleblower released that material, it would show we were doing things appropriately. If you reduce too much, then they say there's too much information.
Okay. So in other words, under the Whistleblower Protection Act, and it does not necessarily apply here, although there is a military Whistleblower Protection Act, it defines whistleblowing as releasing information that you believe is indicative of criminal or corruptive activities. And so what you're saying here is that if I was to release 10 documents and only 3 of them indicated in that corruption, it would not necessarily mean that I hadn't been a whistleblower. And vice versa. If I show only one of those 3 documents, it would not necessarily mean I was not a whistleblower.
Yeah. Well, so there's an issue here because, and I think this is where people get into a contentious debate. And so whistleblower is actually a legal term. So there are some who I've gotten into a discussion with that are bothered by attaching this label because under law, Manning could not be considered a whistleblower. Now, my response to that is I think that the public, you know, citizens in this country, should make that decision themselves. I mean, after all, their government is making this decision to go after this person. And I think that you can have a sort of sense of the public that in terms of public opinion, is Manning a whistleblower? And then I think that's something that people in this country have an ongoing debate with. It certainly does not have to be settled today. It doesn't have to be settled after he's convicted and put into jail. I'm sure people will be debating this question for many years. But I think that after the statement, it shows that because he was doing research about the documents, because he selected sets, and he did not release all the information he had access to, there was much more information that he could have released if he just wanted to share everything that he had access to with WikiLeaks. He certainly could have done that, but he did not. He had rational explanation for each set of documents that was provided or for the video that was provided. And I myself find that to indicate that he is a whistleblower. And then there's another context. I don't know if we have time to fully get into it, but the other context is that I just can't get past the fact that there are so many officials from the previous administration under George W. Bush who committed war crimes, who have not been prosecuted, who have not been investigated fully, and are enjoying impunity. And I look at what Bradley Manning is doing. I look at what other soldiers have done and have, and that there are cases that could have been brought against them for committing crimes, and those cases weren't brought. And then I say to myself, is it right that people would want more punishment for Manning? I mean, he was in prison for 9 months at Quantico, and the judge found that he was unlawfully punished. And then during that time, he was held in conditions of solitary confinement. So I think there's a larger context to this. If you don't think he's a whistleblower, then there's this other context of, is it right that we are going after him? I mean, if we're going to move forward and not look back, could we do it for Bradley Manning?
Right. And we should say at this point, has there been any showing by the government at any time in any forum that the release of those documents and the video has materially impacted anyone's safety or harmed U.S. security?
There's been no evidence presented. I was at a panel event where P.J. Crawley, the former State Department spokesperson, spoke, and he said that hundreds of individuals had been harmed involved in the State Department. I know that there was embarrassment, and they had to shuffle around people who were ambassadors and maybe even remove some people from their jobs because what was revealed in the cables showed that there were backroom dealings going on, that there were things that were the way that the United States is handling diplomacy was not something that other countries would approve of if they knew the full extent. But they have not shown that any informants who were informing about the Taliban were killed. They haven't shown anyone who had information revealed about them was subjected to inhumane treatment or anything and killed. I know that there was an Ethiopian journalist that had to flee. That was a story. But believe me, if there were people who had died, we would hear about them.
Right.
Our government would make sure that we knew that Bradley Manning had been responsible for the death of someone, and I have not heard about it yet.
Now let's talk briefly about the tremendous amount of lack of coverage that is sort of and the sort of minimal amount of coverage of the lack of coverage. I think short of yourself and Alexa O'Brien, who's going to join us on this panel, and a third reporter. Whose name escapes me, forgive me.
His name is Adam Klasfeld.
Yes, and short of the three of you, there has not been any reporters who have been covering this on a consistent day-to-day basis.
That is correct, that there are only about three people who have consistently been there at every proceeding. I guess I would give credit and add Clark Stokely, who is our courtroom sketch artist, who has been doing good sketches that I have included in my posts. But he certainly hasn't been necessarily, reporting, giving people the best insight, because that's not his job. But he has been there, too, so I would give him credit. But these bigger organizations like the Washington Post and then more significantly the New York Times, which benefited from publishing the information that WikiLeaks had from Manning. The New York Times showed up for the first time in almost a year in December of 2012. They weren't there at the beginning of the major hearing on Manning's treatment at Quantico, which was a huge hearing. It went on for over 2 weeks, and there were between 10 and 20 witnesses that took stand, and they were all from the chain of command, and it was incredible. I mean, this hearing was a story in and of itself. They weren't there. They showed up at the end because the public editor, Margaret Sullivan, who I really have deep admiration for, wrote two columns about why isn't the New York Times there covering? And that was very important, and I think it shamed them and got them to send two of their reporters. And so now they've been there covering. I really do have to point out that I travel from Chicago. Alexa travels from New York City. Adam travels from New York City as well. There, people who have been covering this aren't people who actually live in Washington, D.C.
Right.
Where are the journalists who actually live in Washington, D.C.? And I would go outside of just the establishment journalists. Where are the independent and alternative journalists who could also be going there? Because I have to say that it's relatively easy to get credentialed. I mean, they've credentialed the Bradley Manning Support Network reporter to cover, and they didn't want to, but they have because they're not filled to capacity, so they might as well give everyone a credential that wants to be there in the media center.
Just to contextualize this, I mean, I don't know who the last individual in this country was charged with aiding and abetting the enemy, where an American military or national security personnel was charged with this. But I mean, you know, if this person is presumably to be tried for a capital offense, the idea that the major media would not be covering this is stunning. I mean, what do you think accounts for this?
Well, I would also add that there was amazing coverage of the releases, and particularly for the cables. You could see almost wall-to-wall coverage from November 30th, 2010 through the first couple weeks of December.
Well, I mean, you mentioned yourself that it's still being used by the Guardian newspaper, and I think there's literally on any given week at least a number of accounts that reference those cables and no longer even reference them as the cables, as much as sort of simply now it is in the ether, I guess, in terms of our knowledge of certain instances.
Yeah, that's correct. So, and I must mention that, like, yeah, Ed Pilkington of The Guardian has been there. But, you know, the problem I have is that there's this thing that, like, a lot of journalists in establishment and more prominent news organizations are doing is when they're only coming when they think there's going to be a headline that they're going to be able to report. I mean, that's not the way to do it, because there is a, you know, this whole process is cumulative. And if you miss a couple days, then you're going to show up and you're not really going to know what is being litigated. I mean, it's that complicated. So why is it this way? I mean, so the New York Times' excuse was that this is a pretrial process and we wouldn't you wouldn't typically cover that. I don't think that's particularly true. And I spoke to Arun Rath with who did a little post about the media coverage, and he is working with PBS Frontline, and he and I both agreed that this doesn't seem to be a valid excuse, because the pretrial proceedings for the 9/11 terror suspects at Guantanamo, they're getting lots of coverage.
Right.
The Nashiri, who's alleged to have bombed the USS Cole, his pretrial proceeding is getting a lot of coverage for that. So why not Bradley Manning's case? There is no valid explanation. I think that we could try to find one, but we're not going to find one.
Right. Now let me just ask you, I want to just touch on, you have joined into a lawsuit. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct.
Tell us about that. You and I think Alexa O'Brien and others are plaintiffs in a lawsuit. Tell us what that that lawsuit is.
All right, so currently, when you show up to report on the Bradley Manning proceedings, you're not given any copies of court records. So we're talking about judges' orders. We're talking about decisions in the proceedings and motions from the defense or the government. Those are not handed to you by any of the people who are taking care of the media. And the reason is because the military has decided that they'll keep these secret. In fact, in all court-martial cases, you are not given access to records from the proceedings. And we find this to be just the way that they're doing this makes it hard to cover the proceedings, and it basically goes to undermining press freedom when you get down to it. And so I've signed on to this lawsuit that's being brought by the Center for Constitutional Rights. Other plaintiffs that are on include the names that are there, Glenn Greenwald, Jeremy Scahill with The Nation, Amy Goodman of Democracy Now!, even WikiLeaks and Julian Assange are named to it. Chase Madar wrote a book, Passion of Bradley Manning. All of these individuals, Alexa and I, who have actually been there reporting, have written declarations and describe what it is like to actually go and report there, and how that you can't basically how when you're sitting there, you have to struggle to keep up with the judge, because when she reads the ruling, she reads about 180 words per minute, which is almost impossible to keep up, especially when those rulings take an hour to an hour and a half to read, as has been the case with the very important rulings about his treatment at Quantico or whether his speedy trial rights had been violated. You should have been there to hear the speedy trial ruling. It was an alphabet agency soup and a long list, a laundry list of dates that you could not keep up with to accurately report to the public what was being read.
All right. Now, Kevin, we just got a couple minutes here, and I know you got to get on a plane. But just give me a sense tomorrow, again, to remind people, I will be moderating a panel which you'll be a part of, as well as with Brigida John's daughter, the Icelandic MP and WikiLeaks activist Alexa O'Brien, and Peter Hart. What do you think is one of the more important things that should come out at that panel tomorrow?
I think people should just understand that Manning's case is part of I think it represents the fact that there has been a certain level of lawlessness and impunity that now exists in this country. And one of the things that most bothers me about the pursuit of Bradley Manning and the way people – there are some in this country who want to see justice for him. It really bothers me that people want justice for him, but then they don't want justice for other people who I think have committed far worse crimes. And I just put it that way because I think that you have to allow this sort of thing to happen, or you have to accept that it will happen, that people inside these agencies, these employees, are going to release information if they can see that those agencies or within the military there are cover-ups going on, or that certain individuals are not going to be held accountable, or you know, maybe in the case of this recent person who's taking a higher position in the CIA, it seems, you know, if you destroy torture tapes, you get a promotion. So it's like, I think that's the big thing that people need to focus on, this larger context. I mean, you can talk just about Manning, but we really do have this bigger thing going on here in this country of not being able to take care of individuals who have committed crimes in government and actually hold them accountable.
Kevin Gastola from Fire Dog Lake, thanks for joining us, and we'll see you tomorrow night.
Thank you.
All right, folks. I want to just add that I think that one of the things that I think, you know, is important to focus on that we'll also be talking about at the panel tomorrow night, and I think that's the reason why Peter Hart, the media analyst at FAIR, will be with us, is that what we're seeing is part of a much broader assault on transparency in this country, on the ability for the media to report upon what's going on in this country. I don't know. I mean, I think what is really clear from this case, from my perspective, and whether or not you believe Bradley Manning is technically a whistleblower, whether or not you believe he should go to prison for breaking the uniform code of military justice, the bottom line is that he is being used to be made an example of to others in the government to prevent them from whistleblowing. He's being used to, as an example, to be made an example of, to chill and dissuade media from pursuing the truth about what our government is doing at any given time, and not just our government. You know, I think, I don't know, we interviewed on this program Thomas Drake and Jocelyn Raddick some time ago. And for Ring of Fire, I just interviewed Tim Sharrock, who wrote a piece in the Nation magazine, author of Spies for Hire, about the story of Drake and three or four other NSA whistleblowers. And what they were blowing the whistle on was, and we should say that their claims were subsequently confirmed by the special investigators. What they were blowing the whistle on was twofold, was a tremendous amount of fraud and waste in terms of the corruption of outsourcing to a private contractor intelligence intelligence responsibilities, and also that the desire to do so, in their opinion, prevented the implementation of other intelligence apparatus that they believe had a very good chance of stopping the attacks on 9/11. To the extent that they were prosecuted, and they attempted to do so with Drake, the prosecution failed, they ruined the lives of the other NSA whistleblowers. This was not based upon security grounds. There was no threat to U.S. security because of what they did. They went to the Office of the Special Investigator, the Inspector General, and their claims were validated. Yet their lives were ruined. What we're seeing here is individuals in that apparatus looking to protect themselves from the accountability of their failures and perhaps fraud, but at the very least their failures, by destroying these people. It's the functional equivalent of being at work and having a manager who doesn't like the fact that you are reporting him or her to human resources, or you are the one who's raising your hand in a meeting and saying, hey, you know, the way that we're using these shipping containers, that doesn't make any sense. Yet these people use the construct of national security essentially as their own cudgel and their own shield to get retribution and to spread the word. Do not buck the system. And the system being, really, don't mess with my career. Except for in this case, it's not a question of whether or not there's a more efficient way and a way to save some cost savings on the way you ship things. It is our national security. And in this case, it's not a question of, that's a bad place to work. We're talking about the apparatus of our government being used in, if not an illicit manner, although probably an illicit manner, a highly inappropriate one. And I think you need to see Bradley Manning in that context. This is a shot across the bow to any person in the government, in the military or not, who would blow the whistle on corruption and fraud and malfeasance. This is a shot across the bow to any media outlet that would in any way enable that whistleblower to get the information out. That's why this case is so important. And that's why the media's failure to cover this case is so reprehensible. All right, we're going to take a break, head into the better half of the program. The number is 646-257-3920. Folks, ladies and gentlemen. This show relies on your generous support. So if you can afford to become a member and you haven't, see how I'm mixing it up? I'm not just coming out doing the same old thing. Today I'm putting some background music there. Show, what's that?
Sad background music.
Yeah, it's kind of sad.
Kind of poignant.
Yeah. It's sad that this show relies on you, on audience support. Why? We should have a huge corporate sponsor. I will say this. I did have a meeting with General Dynamics the other day. They are the maker of some of our nuclear subs. They're interested in a little rehabilitation of their name. No, folks, you guys are the people who listen to this program are the ones who keep this show alive and make it possible for me to do it and make it possible for me to continue to do it by, you know, we want to, if we get to a certain point, we can start to plow more resources back into the production of the show. Matt and I were talking about this yesterday. The more memberships we get, the more we can hire other people to help us produce more content to develop more revenue in other areas. In other words, we get some revenue from YouTube. Not a huge amount, but a decent amount.
Like, you all don't think we're just going to take extra money and just sit here pumping out the same stuff, do you?
I mean, there's no way you guys are. But
I'll all go to swing and baby food purchases.
You wouldn't believe how many diapers this kid goes through.
Oh, the diapers. I was thinking of the baby food. The diapers
have this system now that Nikki got with the diaper. Well, you know what? We'll save this conversation for the better half of the program.
Let's continue to try to get money from people.
Yeah.
You got to mix it up a little bit.
So, folks, become a member today at Majority.fm. It's easy to join. Relatively easy. And it's... oh, so gratifying. You can also support this program by buying your Amazon crap through our Amazon link. Go to majority.fm, click on support the show, click on the Amazon link, bookmark it. You'll never have to do another thing again. Just buy your Amazon crap through there. We get a little kickback. And justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, chocolate, co-op, employee-owned, fair trade, coupon code, majority, get 10% off. 646-257-3920 is the number. 646-257-3920 is the number. You can IM me at Majority FM. We have a special libertarian line for people who want to make unsubstantiated claims without any empirical basis, but that they sound like it should work. And that number is 646-257-3920. We have another line that we're going to open up for libertarians who basically want to say we should all have the ability to buy unsafe cars, foods, suck in dirty air, I guess.
Because no company would ever sell an unsafe car or contaminated food.
Well, no, but if we got a discount.
People
might want to choose. I'm going to drive an unsafe car for less money.
I'm going to knock 100 off. The gas tank can explode any day.
Well, what about the guy who bumps in from behind me? Well, he didn't have that savings. So there he gets blown up, and he didn't get the savings. And it's a drag. What are you going to do? All right, folks, 646-257-3920 is the number. The IM is Majority FM. Tomorrow on the program, I don't want to make any promises, but Cliff Schechter should be here. And Mark Maroon from the podcast What If may be joining us, I believe. Did I mispronounce that? Is it what if?
I'm not sure.
What if? What if? a very popular podcast, apparently, with kids. All
right,
folks.
Milo listens to it, right?
Who?
Milo listens to it, right?
Yes.
It's very popular with the kids.
Yes, the little kids. All right, talk to you later. I mean, in a second. Bye.